Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Jeff Brazier Only Human, my open and honest podcast, where we can talk and ask questions about what's working in our lives and what we're finding difficult. As a trained life coach, I believe a straight talking conversation is vital to our future happiness, mental health and positivity. So this podcast is all about doing exactly that, saying out loud what we're finding tough and sharing advice and tips on the things that are helping. Removing the expectations we put on ourselves and taking every day one step at a time. There are themes within this podcast that some people might find upsetting. So if you're affected by any of the issues raised in this episode, please speak to a professional or visit absoluteradio.co.uk/time to listen for details of some amazing organisations we work with who can help. So this week's subject was prompted for me by some really sad news of someone's passing, an avoidable death, anyone who takes their own life. It's the most incredibly sad situation to hear about. I know that life is difficult for many. I know that the pandemic in the last 12 months has obviously had a bearing on people's mental health generally. And I wanted to focus on male mental health because I just looked at some stats around how much more likely men are to actually die by suicide than women. And I think it's 3 in every 4 will be male. 1 in 8 men, by all accounts, is experiencing a common mental health issue like depression, anxiety, panic disorder, OCD. And what I think we all understand and assume with men is that we are not as good as women at helping ourselves, at talking. And there are reasons for that. And I guess that traditionally, we've been told from a very young age, for the last however many generations, that our job is to be strong. And our job is to be in control and look after everyone and provide and support and not really take any of that for ourselves, not really needing that for ourselves. But I mean, life's changed so much, hasn't it? With the improvements around diversity and inclusivity and equality within any household. And I speak about mine really as a really good example in that there isn't really anything that I can bring to the table as far as his family's concerned that my wife can't. She would say, well, hold on, actually, you know, sometimes I can't unscrew a lid to a jar. And, you know, that if I'm really being honest and scraping the barrel is the only thing that I feel like I could say is, well, that's my job. You know, that's my role. And, you know, we apportion the roles, don't we, between ourselves and our partners and or our kids as well, whoever lives here. So these things have changed a lot over the years. And I think it's been incredibly empowering for women who rightly now are recognised as being capable of doing anything that they want to. But what of men, you know, in terms of over the years, I've not really thought about anyone else's transition other than my own, in that I love the fact that I'm far more supported emotionally by my wife, because I've obviously over the years learnt to be able to share my vulnerability and recognise the benefits of doing so. To be listened to and validated by our partners can often be enough. There will be stresses and there will be problems, there will be challenges. And it's up to us as human beings to work it all out as we go along. And obviously, if we're not sharing what's going on for us, as is quite typical with a lot of men, then you're carrying the weight of it. I think over the years, women have obviously gone in one direction in terms of their roles altering, and rightly so. But have men adjusted? Have men looked at the expectations on them and what they bring to the family environment and actually adjusted the fact that, well, there's probably less pressure on me to be the all and everything? I don't think most have. I'd say a very small percentage of men would now recognise that they are literally, you know, equal partners in their relationship and in that family balance. Actually, it's not all on them, but maybe they still feel like it is. Maybe they still feel like it's still their job, regardless of what equality means or shows, that I must be the one who's bringing in the majority of an income. As a man, we are telling ourselves that we have to be the answer and that we have to be the solution. Well, it's a terrible pressure to put on yourself. Anyway, how do we help navigate these unhelpful suggestions and traditions around masculinity and what it means to be a man. So let's dispel some of those, shall we? And let's reframe things in a more healthy way.
Okay, this first question, Jeff, is from Phil. We need to discuss that men need to be taught to listen, hold space and understand. Men can't talk to their mates unless they are able to open up and hold that non-judgmental space for each other. Masculinity and its stereotypical traits are dangerous. Many men feel alone if they don't portray that perfect masculinity. Until men accept that we are all different and that it's okay to be different, the ability for honest conversations to take place will be minimal.
Yeah, I mean, look, let me echo that. It is absolutely imperative that we are ourselves and that we're not trying to live up to any social norms. If anything, a lot of the social norms around masculinity are absolutely outdated. But I can, you know, really see how at the moment, because of rates of unemployment, the uncertainty around job prospects in the future, this is probably the most uncertain time since war times, effectively, since the Second World War, that we could have possibly found ourselves in. If you are surprised that you're feeling not quite your best, you know, and I say that as an understatement, think about it. These are the hardest times that we've ever encountered. These are the most uncertain times, and there are threats to our normal day-to-day routine and the way that we live and the securities that we have enjoyed over the years. Yeah, more so now than there ever has been. I know that for men, you know, to not know whether we're secure in our employment, I know that's absolutely massive for most. Because again, it's like, if we're not the providers, then what are we? What actual value do we provide our family? And the truth is that you are so much more than a figure that you put in a bank account on a monthly basis. You are people's support. You are, you know, that source of love and of care and affection. Your presence is enough. Just you being you and being present and being someone that is there honestly trying to work through whatever the impacts on coronavirus in the last 12 months has had on you. I don't think anyone expects you to be perfect or to be strong. And it's a term that comes up a lot, you know, especially around men and male mental health. And, you know, what is strength? You know, a lot of people think that strength is suppression and not actually sharing the issue. And it's rubbish. It's rubbish because we're all vulnerable and we're all going through difficulties. And if we don't every now and again turn up at the dinner table and maybe say, I've had an absolute shocker today, I feel really sad or I feel down, then you're not being honest. When did it ever become okay to lie to people that we love and that depend on us? But actually, I think what kids and partners and friends and family members generally need of all of us, and it's our responsibility now, I think, is to just be honest so that people know where we are. And I don't mean geographically. I don't mean, right, and I know that they're in the living room. I mean that they know where we are emotionally, because that will then tell them how much they should worry and maybe how much they can afford to relax. You are not doing anyone a favour by pretending to be okay when you're not. That's not leadership. That's not strength. That's not masculinity. That is you conforming to traditions that are outdated and irrelevant. What we need to do is normalize vulnerability, normalize the fact that we might not be okay sometimes. If you are male and you are listening to that and you thought, right, actually, yeah, that pretty much speaks volumes about the pressure that I'm putting on myself and how actually it's quite ineffective and counterproductive, you know, and how I'm not really helping the people that I love. Good. Maybe rewind it and listen to it again.
This next question is from Mark, and an observation from him as well. Not to cry, be strong, look after everyone else, man up. Just some of the things I've heard throughout my life and believed. It's so important to try and change these stereotypes and defaults we can all have.
Isn't it just what a terrible expression it is to man up? You know, I've used it loads of times probably in the past. I would have used it in my football career, you know, when I felt particularly tired or something was particularly challenging. I might have said, you know, come on, man up. feel like, you know, that was short-sighted, but obviously, you know, we don't know at the time, do we? It's good that we question phrases and terminology, and so we should, because as society moves on and evolves and develops, so should the way that we title things or the phrases that we use to describe certain things. In those moments, obviously, it's not about manning up. It's about, come on, you can do it. It's a genderless thing. It's not necessarily, you're a man, so you should be able to withstand, you know, great pressure, and you should be able to cope with anything. It's just unhelpful. It really, really is. So nobody needs to man up anymore. What you need to do as a human is just be able to open up. So I'm going to change that first word from man to open. You know, there's so many reasons why men don't talk. You know, I've got to be the breadwinner. I've got to be strong. I've got to be dominant. I've got to be in control. You know, and we're, as a result, so much less likely to recognize our emotional needs. But, you know, these stereotypes, I want everybody to think about, and whether they're healthy for them. I hope that that's what this podcast will do, this particular episode, because I think we should all just challenge, what are my expectations of myself as a man? What is society's expectations of me as a man? What expectations do my group of friends have of me as a man in certain situations? And I can already answer that for myself as I'm sort of asking the question. I'm sort of answering it in my mind as well. But I've had two conversations the last two evenings with two really good friends that I guarantee years ago would not have offered this. But both of them, you know, we've had a laugh. We've talked about certain things. We've talked about football and golf and the Masters and whatever else is going on. But they've also told me a few things that they've found emotionally difficult. And that is progress. So that's the point, is that we want to try and make as many men feel encouraged to share what they would have deemed as being weakness, but actually them realizing that there is a strength in doing so. Talking is usually something that we shy away from because it feels difficult. That's the clue. When something feels difficult and outside our comfort zone, that's usually what we need to do the most. When thinking about my own masculinity, I honestly think that, you know, I sit here now with a sort of a top knot, and Emma's looking at me and she can sort of see that I've got a very long hair at the moment, because obviously I haven't been able to get my hair cut. When this goes out, I will have been able to have got my hair cut yesterday. I'm actually deciding not to. I've got so used to the long locks that I kind of just want to let it go for a little bit. I quite like tying it up. However, was I scared to tie it up? For a point, did I actually think, well, what my friend's gonna say? I probably did. That's your masculinity and your ego getting involved. And again, for a lot of men, we trip over our sense of masculinity and ego regularly. For me, my masculinity is almost, I don't know, I like to think that it's masculine, that I took responsibility for my children and brought them up the best way that I could, honestly, you know, and truthfully. And that's probably the most masculine thing, and maybe the only masculine thing that I can really think of doing, because I realise that my goalposts have always been to be as human as possible. And I think that's a really healthy way to go about dictating and deciding how manly we are. How manly do I need to be? I don't know. I know what I've had to be for my children. I've had to become almost like a hybrid. I'm a dad and I can only be a dad, so I can never be mum and dad, because that's impossible. But I can certainly be more sensitive to their emotional needs. And I've probably benefited from that, because it's helped me to really understand the value of letting them express their emotions and to encourage their emotions, but to obviously share mine, because as dad, I need to be that role model. And if they can see it in me, if they can see that I'm going to therapy and that I really benefit from it and that I seem to look forward to my sessions as opposed to, oh, this is going to be painful. It's, you know, sometimes it's difficult, but it's never painful. It's always more of a relief, to be honest. They look at that and think, well, maybe that's manly, but it's not, because it's genderless, isn't it? It's just brave. And so when I try and define, you know, what makes me a man, I always just refer back to, I'd rather think about what makes me human. And I reckon a lot of other men would probably do well to actually consider that themselves, what makes me human today? What actions did I take that actually gave to others, that made me feel good? What did I contribute? And again, this is all genderless, and we can tick many boxes in the human category without necessarily needing to go in pursuit of, right, what box can I tick in the manly category?
This next question is a really important question, Jeff. The person who sent it in didn't send in their name. This is anonymous. A really good friend of mine is in a really dark place. In March 2020, his younger brother died by suicide, and obviously this has really affected him and his mental health. He goes through stages of shutting himself away from everyone and not talking to anybody. It is causing problems at his workplace, and he's on the verge of losing his job. He saw a counsellor but didn't connect with them and didn't get the benefits from it, which maybe we hoped he would. I'm really struggling to know how to support him, but won't back down from doing so. Do you have any advice?
Well, you're a good friend, and thank you for being there for him. You can imagine when it comes to losing a younger sibling, that there will be guilt and feelings of, you know, responsibility. I should have done more. I should have been there. And the truth is that actually sometimes it's so difficult to detect the signs of someone actually feeling like they're suicidal. Why would we assume that if we've been given no reason to whatsoever? But I can imagine that in a lot of cases there is responsibility taken and guilt apportioned that maybe isn't actually relevant. But try telling them that. To get anybody into seeing a counsellor is obviously a massive move. We know that gives us the assurance of knowing that they're receiving professional care and advice. What people don't always realise is that sometimes not every therapist is for everybody. There are different therapists with different training, different backgrounds, different styles, and actually they've got their own personalities and characters as well. So, you know, sometimes it really is a case of maybe consulting with a few before you kind of really get a true sense of who it is that you want to actually dedicate the next however many years to speak into. And again, I say years, sometimes it might be months. I'm someone who's sat in therapy for 4 years, but again, I understand that at the beginning of our therapy journey, if you like, when something horrendous has happened in our life, that is not necessarily something that we wanted to do for much more than, you know, a couple of months maybe. But once you get into it, I guess you become more comfortable with it, and the stigma attached to therapy will start to dissipate. What I would just want to do, and this is in answer to this question, but also to a lot of people that are listening to this who are maybe in a similar situation. I think if we're being honest, have we not all got someone either in our inner circle or maybe on the fringes of that we know that is struggling in one way, shape or form? The five steps that I'm going to talk about are relevant to everybody. So first of all, we need to be comfortable in asking how they are as a first port of call. It's a very obvious question. But also, if you feel like suicide is a potential and you just want to eliminate that and rule it out, then it isn't insensitive to ask that. It's quite brave, but sometimes it'd be really necessary, because their response might actually give you the feedback that you need in order to feel either reassured or in order to almost escalate your concern. This is how mind.org.uk advise on how to have that conversation. They say there is still a taboo around talking about suicide, which can make it even harder for people experiencing these feelings to open up and feel understood. Direct questions about suicide, like, are you having suicidal thoughts, or have you felt like you want to end your life, can help somebody talk about how they're feeling. Again, look for the feedback, look for the response. Do you believe their response if they've said no? If they've said yeah, then obviously, well, what do we do there? And I'll go on. So secondly, you've got to listen. A lot of people in a lot of situations, whether it's grief or mental health, we really expect ourselves to come up with this magic string of words and sentences that just make the situation better. That's a lot of pressure to put on yourself, in all honesty. So listening is always underestimated, always undervalued. If you've asked the question, and then just be prepared to sit there and be in rapport. And that means to, you know, literally mirror their body shape, and to, you know, make sure you've got eye contact and listen to every word that comes out of their mouth, because you will be enabling them to express, and that is valuable. Encouraging people to talk. It's vital that people can talk and that are comfortable enough to do so. So provide them with that platform. So when it comes to whatever it is that they've then told you, you've got to then do something with that information and help them to make a plan. And so it's like, right, you feel like this and it's because of this. Right, what are we going to do to make it better? So this is where you can become quite coach-like. You can ask some really good open questions that, again, help your friend or the individual that you're talking to explore their mind further. So, okay, what are we going to do with the situation that you've just told me about? What's the next step to making things better? Who do you need to tell in order to not carry the load yourself? What do you need to change? So there's just some examples, and they're really obvious and typical. And, you know, it's just try not to give so much advice and actually try to ask more questions. And that is what we consider being coach-like. And that will really help someone to be able to elongate their line of inquiry into their own thoughts and feelings, which is a really powerful thing. Again, if that person is particularly fragile, I would say identify the people around you or them that also have a vested interest in that person being healthy and that person recovering, that person feeling better or getting into speaking to another therapist, so that you're not actually carrying the burden of being that person's sole support. Because again, that's really a job for a professional. As a friend, yes, it is our job to look out for people. But I think at a point we have to see ourselves almost as a referral service, but one that obviously always checks in and one that is always available for that person to be able to offload to. Who else loves this person? Who else is in this person's life? Maybe form a WhatsApp group, something that I've done around someone in the past. And that's a way of you sharing information about what was said in the last conversation and anything that might be useful and helpful for you all to be able to put a net, a safety net underneath that person for the time being. You know, if you do feel like that person is actually worse than you suspected, and maybe if there have been suicidal thoughts, then you tell that person that you'd like to get them some medical help now. You'd make sure that you're with them. You know, that really is everything that you can do. And again, it's all really about seeing yourself as a friend, as a referral service to, okay, they've told me and that's really good. Now what's the next step? You know, whether they're, you know, particularly down or whether actually this is something that they're kind of managing that we just need to keep an eye on. But look, I hope those things are helpful. Obviously, these are things that I've researched by looking at websites such as Calm, such as The Samaritans. But, you know, there is a list of these on the absoluteradio.co.uk website. It's /time to listen. And there are details of, again, some amazing organisations who can absolutely help. It's a big responsibility to take on yourself. Make sure that you are sharing that responsibility with others. And again, you know, listening is really the most fundamental thing that we can give a friend or that we have the ability to do. But when it comes to referring them to professionals, I'd always recommend that we try and do that as early on as we possibly can. If someone is seeing a professional, then there is a much better chance of them turning things around and regaining their health.
This question is anonymous, or this message. Men should be able to show their emotions and not be afraid to cry and scream and shout if that's how they feel. My husband is 69, and even now he is finding emotions he didn't know he had. Talking, talking, and more talking is the way forward.
And whoever sent that in, what a relief for you. All those years have gone by where someone has just literally suppressed things that they didn't probably realise they were burying. And now next thing you know, the lockdown effect, and I've described this on previous episodes, but we've all had the time and the space and the quietness, if you like, and the peace and the stillness to actually be able to check in with what's going on in our subconscious mind. And that's not something that we proactively do. It's something that just happens automatically. And as a result, I know that lots of people have been experiencing feelings that they didn't know existed. And that you can feel one day really sad and down. And you can look around and think, but I'm happy. My family life is great. And I'm lucky enough to still have a job. And, you know, I still do have some security in my life. How can I possibly feel this way? And it's because that box has been opened. We all have a box that we've systematically stuff things in. I guess men's boxes could potentially be a lot more packed than others, but you know, we'll have been doing that to a degree over the years, and lockdown has opened a lot of people's boxes, and what comes out echoes of things that we didn't deal with at the time, that all of a sudden our subconscious is like, well, we saved this for you because that's how it works. You never really get away without actually dealing with things. You know, people don't realize that's how we work. People don't realize that our conscious mind is 5% of who we actually are in total. And that beneath the surface, you know, the areas that we don't typically explore or talk about or even think about, that's 95% of actually who we are and what we've got going on. So it's absolutely no surprise that a lot of us listening to this will have been hit with emotions that feel like they're not relevant to today, but are actually, you know, things that have been let out. So there you go. There's another, I guess it's proof to the point that to talk is to express, is to mean that you don't have to put anything in your box that you've then got to deal with 30 years down the line. You know, if anyone's like, yeah, you know, we shouldn't talk about things because it's just a reminder of the problem. That is probably what people used to say in 1950. Now, actually, if you don't talk and if you don't work through whatever it is that you're feeling or going through at the time, which is always valid and is always okay, then we're stitching ourselves up in years to come. We're literally stitching our future selves up. So, yeah, I don't want to encourage my kids to do that. And I want to make sure that they've got a healthy understanding of the fact that to go through difficulty is normal and is human and is the experience of man or woman. And that actually, if we learn to deal with things honestly and truthfully in the moment at the time, then in years to come, you won't have to sit in 4 years of therapy like I've just done in order to, you know, revisit your childhood and basically make right the things that have obviously, you know, always laid beneath the surface, just niggling away. I love the fact that this is a 69-year-old man who grew up at a time when it was not okay to share feelings. It was not the norm. It was not the dumb thing. And for them to be able to get that therapy now and be able to discuss things with their partner is just so healthy and is so reassuring. And that is something that we all have the ability to do, and that we should actually, as a point of looking after ourselves and certainly our future selves, should look to do as much as we can. So whilst I know it's been really important for me today to talk about what we can do to help others, it's really important to just touch on, again, the basics of good mental health for all of us individually. Talking is massive. You must talk. You must talk. And stay as active as you can. Being active is really important for a number of reasons. There are social benefits. There are physical benefits. We often don't understand the amount of chemicals that are released when we exercise that are good for our mind and our mental health. The two are very intrinsically linked, and we must always remember that. We have to eat well. You know, we have to really have a look at the balance of things that we are putting in to the body. It is fuel, you know, and if we want our mind to be healthy, then we need to put good fuel in, right? We need to hydrate. That is another completely underestimated thing. You know, drinking water is again, like people think, oh, water, boring. But it's literally what we need to survive. You know, a certain percentage of our body is actually water. So make sure that's topped up. And you can tell if you need more water by what happens when you go to the toilet, right? I'm starting to sound like people's dad here. I'm not trying to lecture, but just go over the basics, okay? To communicate. I mean, I guess I've said that in talking, but to communicate with people, to have a social life of any extent, and to not isolate yourself or shut yourself off or withdraw socially, you know, to communicate is really, really key. To be able to ask for help. You know, have you asked for help lately? Have you ever said to anybody, you know, I think I could do with a chat or a cup of tea? That's kind of asking for help. It's recognizing your needs and acting on it so that you give yourself what it is that you would benefit from. Do you take breaks, or are you like many people in lockdown who are working from home, who are sort of forgetting that breaks exist and that lunch hours are really important to keep a balance for yourself? Breaks are really important to not sustain a stressful or high pressure situation for any longer than you need to. Do something you love. You know, make sure it's not all work, unless you obviously love work, and then that's different. But make sure there's something that makes you feel like you can get lost in it, and something that you do. Like for me, it's golf at the moment, like where you're just in your happy place and you're doing something that takes your mind off of your stresses and your worries. Those things are worth their weight in gold. Always have been, but none more so than now. Acceptance in who you are, I think, is a massive basic requirement. All of your perceived strengths and weaknesses, do you accept that that's a culmination of your childhood, of your adult life experiences, of the decisions that you've made? Do you take responsibility for the position in life that you find yourself in? Do you know and accept that you can do something about it whenever you choose? Acceptance is really important. And lastly, I think, even though I could go on, caring for others. Yeah, a lot of us kind of feel like, right, you know, we're under siege at the minute and we need to just look after ourselves. And to an extent, you know, there is a need for that. When we look after other people, though, we get a huge sense of satisfaction. It makes us feel really human. It makes us feel connected. And that is something that will always make us feel good. I used to feel like I had solved my own issues by helping other people with theirs. Whilst it might not go the full distance to solving every issue that we've got, it just makes us feel good, right? We feel human, we feel accessible, we feel like we've done a good deed. And, you know, that helps us sleep at night, and that helps us to also get a sense of identity. If you want your identity to feel strong and to be something that you're proud of, then make sure that your identity and your actions are certainly made up of things that you would not just do for yourself, but that you would do for others as well. Thanks very much for listening to this important episode and this series of Only Human. It's the end of the season, so if you've missed any episodes, please go back and have a listen. We cover a range of topics, including positivity, routines, habits, self-validation, and much more. Thank you all for your questions and contributions throughout the series as well. This is a community, and these podcasts would not have worked without you. And remember, a podcast can only go so far. So if you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed in this series, do please seek professional help or go to absoluteradio.co.uk/timetolisten for details of some amazing organisations that we work with who can help. Thanks everyone for listening to today's episode. And yeah, look after yourselves. Thank you.